Good morning, everyone. The magic hour of noon Eastern has arrived, so I want us to begin the January session of our 2023 annual retreat sponsored by the National Federation of the Blind Seniors Division. My name is Glenn Crosby, and I serve as president of the National Federation of the Blind Seniors Division. I am joined by a circle of very wonderful support people. All of our board members and others have worked very hard to make this retreat for you, this skills development opportunity for you, a great event. And I think you will find it informative and hopefully helpful to you. All of the tips and suggestions that you will hear this week have to do with conducting your life, performing tasks that we need to address every day non-visually. And of course, that does not mean that you should never use your eyesight if it's helpful to you. If you have some eyesight and you find situations where it's helpful, that's great. But you do not have to rely on your eyesight when it is not the best method of achieving a task. I'll give you one example and we'll move on. I was talking to a lady some time ago. She had a little bit of eyesight. And she said, well, you know, when I cook, it's not too good for me to put my face right down to the cook pots. And we agree on that. And she doesn't have to. We explain that to her. So those are the kinds of things we're talking about. Very often there's better ways and easier ways of accomplishing tasks that we need to do, and they can be done non-visually. So I hope you'll find something that you like and that you find useful. I would encourage you to try some of the tips and suggestions as we go along so that you can raise questions if you have any. We have a great lineup of instructors. They're all very capable people and very good people to explain to you virtually how we do things. So with no further ado, I want to recognize our secretary, Shelley Koppel, to introduce our first instructor.
Good morning, everyone. Afternoon, if you're on the East Coast. I am pleased to have Winfred Haynes with us today to do our first day's mobility. He's actually not just the first day. He's graciously accepted the challenge of coming up with our lineup of mobility instructors for the week. And I worked with Winfred last year. I'm afraid I kind of bugged him a little bit this year. So I let him know that I totally appreciate all that he's done. He's from Texas, and Winfred can tell you a little bit about what he does, where he works, all that kind of thing. Welcome, Winfred. Thank you so much for helping us out this year.
I work here in Texas. I work for the Texas Workforce Commission. The place that I work is called Crisco Rehabilitation Center. And what I do is teach orientation mobility. And, you know, we get our students in and we start them indoors and then work outdoors, getting on buses and just going through the whole curriculum. I am originally from New Mexico, and I worked at the Commission for the Blind of New Mexico in a little town called Alamogordo, New Mexico. I've worked there 25 years, and I've been here in Austin now 21 years. So it's been a nice, good, long career. I love, you know, seeing when students get to the point when they're really afraid to cross the street. And then the next thing you know, they're not only crossing streets, but taking buses and going out of town and doing all kinds of things. And it's a very rewarding job. So I'm going to be the lead instructor this week, but today I'm going to be having Duncan Larson is going to be doing this first session today. And it's why long cane, what the cane can do for you, and the proper length of cane to use. So, and Duncan works in Colorado at the center in Colorado, but I will go ahead and let her introduce herself, and she can take it away.
Thank you, Winfred. Good morning, everybody. I did get a chance to meet a lot of you yesterday, and I'm so impressed with this group. I don't think it's any mistake that there are a number of teachers, educators, and very well-educated people in this group, because I think you're all interested in lifelong learning, which will really help you at this point in your life. So I'll tell you a little bit about myself before I start in. I am currently, and have been for a number of years, the Director of Senior Services at the Colorado Center for the Blind. I started out working in the blindness field back in 1978 in Nebraska. I learned cane travel from another blind person, Fred Schroeder. That was a really wonderful experience for me and helped me gain a lot of confidence about what blind people are capable of doing. So I taught cane travel for a number of years in Nebraska, then moved to Colorado and helped Diane McGeorge start the Colorado Center for the Blind, have taught cane travel or orientation or mobility, whatever you want to call it, in Colorado to people of all ages, and then most recently for seniors. So first of all, I want to talk about the importance of using a cane and what a cane can do for you. There are a lot of people that I work with who, when they first hear about using a white cane, they are very hesitant, is probably a mild word. It's not the easiest thing for people to realize that they need a long white cane and then to start to use it. A lot of times people will say to me, well, I'm not that dependent yet. And it's so interesting that people use those words, because a white cane can actually give you the exact opposite of dependence. It gives you independence. It can do that. You can find obstacles in front of you, go around them. You prevent falling by using a long white cane, finding those obstacles. Sometimes they're just changes in the sidewalk. Sometimes they are definitely things to go around. And so that gives independence of being able to travel and go about on your own. So maybe going around your neighborhood, going for walks in your neighborhood, going to new places, having a long white cane will give you more information about a new place too that you've never been to, because you don't know exactly how it's laid out. I think that's the most important thing that a white cane can do, is to provide independence. And I do want to say that I think it's important, even if you're with another person, to be still using your white cane, because that gives you information about what's right in front of you, rather than relying upon the person that you're with, especially if you are taking their arm. You can determine what's in front of you rather than relying on the other person. Independence is the main reason. There are some other reasons to have a white cane. Identifying yourself as a person who's blind or has low vision is something else that's important. I have a friend who is blind, but earlier in his life, as his vision was decreasing, he was waiting at a bus stop and he could not tell what bus was coming. There's several different buses that would stop there. So he asked the bus driver, well, what bus is this? And the driver said, well, can't you see? It's the number 16. And he said, no, I'm blind. And the bus driver said, where's your cane? I think that identifying yourself can really communicate to the public that that's the reason you may be asking certain questions. And so I will tell you that my friend started using a cane after that. That was a big wake-up call for him. So we talked about the white cane and finding obstacles in front of you. There are other ways that the cane can be really helpful besides just finding what's in front of you. You can tell from the sound of the cane where you are. Sometimes you can get an echo from the cane, meaning that you might be going underneath an awning if you're outside. You can hear and feel the different textures under your cane. You can definitely feel the difference between being on carpeting, being on tile, a wood floor. You can feel the edges of hallways. White cane can give you so much information auditorily. So if you're paying attention to your cane, you can hear the difference between being on tile, for example, and being on carpeting. You can also feel that difference. So the canes that we recommend have a lot of tactile sense in them. And we'll talk a little more about that, about the type of cane we recommend in a few minutes. But you can feel through the cane the differences in the textures. And there are differences, you know, of course, in textures when you're outside between the grass and the sidewalk. We didn't even talk about locating curbs. So that's one of the most important things that a white cane can do, is to help you locate steps and curbs. None of us want to step off of a curb or step off of a stairway without knowing that it's there. So a cane used correctly will definitely find that drop off. You can locate that, know that it's there. If you plan to step off the curb, you'll know exactly where it is. If you don't want to step off the curb, you can change directions. There's so many different ways that a cane is useful in travel. Blindness Awareness Month is in October. I've been in the field long enough to remember that I think it was October 15th was White Cane Safety Day. We don't really call it that anymore, but it is true that a white cane can provide you with certainly a lot of safety by, again, determining where your drop-offs are, where the obstacles are, by preventing falls. It is the safest way to travel as a blind person. We're not going to get into guide dogs. That is another option. But even if you have a guide dog, you still need to be able to successfully use a white cane. And that is something that the guide dog schools have become very clear about. People need to be using a white cane and receiving some instruction in using a white cane. Let's talk about the different types of canes that there are. So we absolutely recommend and want the very best white cane for all of you. And that is the NFB long white cane that is a straight cane. It is very lightweight. It has a metal tip, which again gives a lot of sound feedback from the environment. It's helpful to have it be lightweight so that you don't develop carpal tunnel syndrome by using a cane. You're not getting really fatigued using a cane. That it's flexible. So if your cane does bend a little bit, it's not going to break. It's flexible. And the cane comes in very long lengths. So it comes in, we have short, very short canes for children to use. And then we have canes that are over 65 inches long. These canes were developed by the NFB in conjunction with the people who make the canes for us. They're weighted really well so that they're easy to use. There's also a grip that you're going to be holding that is an easy grip. It's something that the cane won't slide out of your hand. It is a softer grip than what we used to have years ago. So that is the cane that at the Colorado Center for the Blind, we have all of our students use. I always tell my students that we want the very best canes for them, and that's why we're teaching them with that cane. Now, with all that being said, I will tell you that there are other white canes. The NFB does also sell a folding cane, which folds in 6 or 7 different folds up to being very small. And that can be very helpful if you're traveling and you want a spare cane. You want to make sure you have a spare cane with you. Those canes are also lighter weight than other folding canes, and they do have the metal tip. There are also telescopic canes, and those, again, they telescope to be a smaller length. That's great. If you're traveling to national convention, you can buy a cane there. But if you're traveling somewhere and you want to make sure you have a spare cane, that's nice to have. again, that has the metal tip. We think that having a metal tip is very important for the audible and the tactile feedback that you receive. Some of you may have other canes. There are many other types of canes that are made that are folding canes. Some are straight canes. And these are generally heavier, more clunky to use. They don't have the metal tip. And so that's why we do not recommend those. Just to get back to, again, using a long straight cane that doesn't fold, I like to tell people that the cane is a tool for independence. You don't want to choose your cane based on what's going to happen to it when you're not using it. You want to choose your cane based on how important it is while you're using it. So that's something to think about.
This is Liz. Could I add something really quick?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, if you guys would like to get a long NFB white cane, we have the free white cane program through the NFB. So you can go to nfb.org or, you know, you could call our national office and you can get a free long non-collapsible cane to try out. It's always good to have a spare if you already have one, but you guys can get one for free.
Thank you so much for adding that. That was going to be my next thing. It's very easy to do, to order your free white cane. And it's my understanding that a person can get a free cane once every 6 months or something like that.
And a couple of things I'll throw in again, like Duncan's talking about the folding canes and collapsible canes. They do work and they're good in, you know, certain situations. Some of the things that are a little different is with the folding canes. If you get a really good one, the joints seal really, really good, so there's no wobble. But some of the canes has a little give in each joint. So when your cane tip hits something, it kind of ripples up the cane. So the information gets to your hand pretty quick, but it's a slight delay because of the rippling of the joints. And then with the collapsible ones, I tend to tell my students that when you use a collapsible cane, you pretty much have to be someone that travels with finesse, because as soon as it hits a little crack, bam, it collapses. So those are a couple of things that, but like Duncan's talking about the long white cane, it's literally as soon as you tap something, the information's in your hand, which is really awesome.
I've had seniors who've wanted to kind of lean on their cane a little bit while they're standing, not necessarily walking, but while they're standing. And a collapsible cane can collapse. Be forewarned about that. We want to encourage you to use a cane for all the reasons I said earlier. Find a good cane. Have a free white cane would be mailed to you, and there's no cost to it. And that's a wonderful service from the National Federation of the Blind. So the question is, why such a long cane? So we want you to walk at your normal pace, at your normal gait. Some of you walk really fast. Some of you walk slower. That varies from person to person. In order to travel really safely and to have enough reaction time to what your cane finds, we say that you need to have at least 3 steps notice, 3 steps reaction time to what's at the end of the cane. So let's say you're walking along and there's a curb in front of you. Your cane finds the curb. You have at least 3 steps to react, 3 steps to say, okay, I need to stop. Okay, I'm going to turn, whatever it is that you are wanting to do. That's why the cane is as long as it is. We generally measure a white cane to be somewhere between a person's chin and their nose. People who walk really fast have longer canes. I know people who have canes that are taller than they are because they walk so fast. There are also people who walk very slowly because of perhaps other mobility concerns or restrictions that they have, who would not need that long of a cane. I believe that the free white cane program says to measure to your shoulder or just below your shoulder. I think somewhere in there, you know, you can measure that and determine what length of cane to get. A lot of times people will start out with a mobility instructor. If they go to a more traditional mobility instructor, they may have a shorter cane. We give people a much longer cane. And there is always a question, why is it so long? Well, it's long so that you can continue to walk at your normal pace. And believe me, walking at your normal pace is a big advantage because when you really slow down, that leads to more veering one direction or another. You can become a better cane traveler by walking at your regular pace. So we don't want you to have to slow down because you're using a white cane. You may be a little slower at first as you're getting used to it, but then we want, again, to have 3 steps advance notice to get to what's at the end of your cane. So let me talk a little bit about how to hold the cane. The best way, I'm going to tell you the best way that I think to hold a cane is to hold it in front of you, centered. So kind of in front of your navel, but out a bit. If you hold it really close to your body, if you come to a crack in the sidewalk, your cane is going to come into your stomach, and that isn't very much fun. So holding it out a bit from you and centered. I like to tell people to hold a cane as if someone just placed it in your palm and then you put your hand around it. And centered because we're going to move the cane in an arc in front of us. So if your cane is centered, it's going to be easier to have that arc be even than if your cane is off to the side. So let me back up a little bit. You're holding your cane in front of you, centered a little bit out from you. And you want to swing your cane back and forth in what we call an arc. And that arc goes from left to right in front of you, a little wider than your shoulders or whatever part of you is the largest part of you, a little wider than you are. That way you're clearing your body. If you have a tiny arc that's shorter or smaller than what I just described, you might miss something. You might miss something that's in front of your left foot, for example. So again, using your cane centered, swinging it back and forth in an arc a little wider than your shoulders. I think it's really good for people to swing once for every step and to alternate feet. Step with your left foot, you would swing over to the right, then step with your right foot, swing over to the left. Keep doing that and getting into that rhythm. So there are a couple of reasons for that. First of all, it taps into your body's natural rhythm. When we learn to walk as children, as babies, we automatically brought our left arm forward when we took a step with our right foot to keep with balance. So this taps into that natural, what we have developed naturally in walking. It also makes sure that we do have at least 3 steps notice before we reach what's at the end of our cane. So that's the reason for that particular cane technique. I am a big proponent of having a really good cane technique because I know it can prevent problems later on as you get more experience and do more things. By having a really good cane technique, it will prevent you from veering. And I'll just say that if you have, for example, a wider arc of your cane to the left and to the right, a person can tend to veer to the left if there's nothing else to go by. So let's say you're walking through a large area. There isn't necessarily a sidewalk. You're going to follow the arc of your cane. So you want your arc to be very even. So I'm going to repeat again, holding your cane in front of you straight out and on the ground and You're going to swing your cane to the left, a little wider than your left shoulder. Take a step with your right foot and swing your cane to the right. Take a step with your left foot. Now, when I learned this, it took me a while to get that rhythm going where it was one cane swing or tap per step, but it is definitely worth the practice. I'm going to say what I think about tapping versus what we call constant contact with the cane, and then ask Winford what he thinks too. So for a lot of people that I work with, I just will ask them to have what I call a constant contact, where they, with their cane, sliding it back and forth on the ground. So it's always on the ground, but there are definitely really great ways to use a cane by tapping on the left, tapping on the right. You do get more sound feedback that way. However, if you do use that technique, you need to make sure that your arc is very, very low, or it's easy to miss a curb or a step. So Winford, what do you say about that?
I pretty much stick with the two-touch technique. Like you were saying, you emphasize to the students that they've got to keep that tip low. So it's only about when it arcs from right to left, it's only about an inch off the ground. This way it's going to catch most cracks. Sometimes it doesn't catch it, but I also tell them the bottom line is you've got to pick up your feet. With constant contact is actually a good technique. I don't have them use it that much. Sometimes if you're like maybe in an unfamiliar area and you're just kind of a little bit nervous or whatever to use it then. I also tell them though, if you're going to use constant contact, make sure that you have an extra tip with you. In fact, you want to have an extra tip with you, even with two touch, because the tips wear out. And it seems to wear out a little more when you're doing constant contact. That's the kind of thing that I would do, is I want to use two touch technique. Again, particularly for picking up echoes and things like that.
Yeah. And you can also do a combination of constant contact and then tapping every once in a while. One of the reasons that I do, if someone has other mobility issues, which a lot of the seniors I work with do, the constant contact will make sure that they find every possible obstacle in front of their feet.
That's true. Someone that has neuropathy in their hands and feet, you want to do that.
And then, of course, the cane tips. It's great to have extra cane tips with you because you never know when you're going to need to put one on. That's another advantage to our canes. We can use extra cane tips. I do want to mention that there are other types of white canes. You know, there are white support canes. Those are, if you need support, that will give you support and give you identification as a person who's blind and has low vision. So those are not going to be longer. They're going to be at the height that you need for support, and they have a rubber tip on them. A lot of people that I work with come to us with a walker, and sometimes they don't really need a walker. They're using a walker to kind of determine what's in front of them. So once they can get a white cane, a long white cane, to determine what's in front of them, if they still need some support, person can use a support cane along with a long white cane. I have seen people be very successful with this, travel all over the city using those techniques so that they have the support they need as well as determining what's in front of them and their independence.
What I want to do is maybe give a little time to see if any of the participants, if you guys have any questions, you can ask Duncan or myself if you have any questions.
Anybody have questions?
Yes. You don't mention the roller tips. I live in Philadelphia, which is not exactly known for straight, smooth sidewalks, and getting around is an adventure. And I find that the roller tip with the constant touching, constant contact, really helps me discover a lot of little potholes in the sidewalk and cracks and things I have to watch out for. Is there a reason that you don't mention those at all?
I am familiar with those. Generally, they are on really heavy canes. So that's why I don't teach with that. But, you know, I'm just going to say that we're giving you some information here, but if that's what works for you, then I want to encourage you to be out and about and using a cane. We don't have any canes that I know of from the National Federation of the Blind that have roller tips. I don't think that the roller tips can go on our white canes.
I actually figured out a way of doing this. My wife had neuropathy and was having difficulty with detecting drop-offs and curbs and all that. So my brother and I, Law and I, we went out and we got some PVC pipe, some really narrow or skinny PVC pipe, and we measured the part that that goes onto the cane on the roller tip. So what we did, we put tape on the, we pulled the rivet out and cut a little bit of the cane, put tape on the cane and slid that PVC pipe on it, and then put more tape on it and put the roller tip on it. And we made sure to measure the height that my wife used, and that's how we modified the roller tip.
You can't get them in catalogs. And I do agree that it's heavier, a little bit heavier, and I do have a folding one. It looks like a bungee cord inside that holds it together, and I've been using it for about 5 years, and I've had to replace the tip, but that's about it.
The thing with for me with modifying the NFB to put the roller tip on it, it just makes it more difficult. So when you're out on your own in life, it's not as easy to get and redo that. So we try and do it as rare as possible because we usually stick to the metal glide tips.
And something else that I have found, the most important benefit to using a white cane, even if I know where I'm going and I have enough vision to get there and I don't really need it to see anything, is for other people to notice it. And if I stop and wait for the light to get a fresh light, they'll come up and say, "Do you need help?" And the cars are more aware of you too. And also, if you ask somebody to read a sign that's across the street, and there's no way you're going to do it, even with binoculars or whatever, they don't think you're just illiterate.
And now June has her hand raised, and then Dr. Carolyn Peters.
I'm June from Delaware. My question is, when I try to get a cane, everyone asks me, what is the inches? How do I know what is the inches on my cane? Because I had to get a new cane, and then I tried to order one from the NFB. The lady, she had asked me, you know, what is the inches? I don't know where that's located on my cane. How would I know?
One of the things that someone has recommended is like your height, subtract 4 to 5 inches from that, or measure from the floor to where, if you want it to your chin or your nose, I would measure to your nose and see how many inches that is, and then order a cane that size.
Carolyn Peters from Ohio. My question would be tips on the long cane in regard to if you're traveling in a small vehicle or on a van or a bus. Some of the concerns I've heard, and even with myself, storing that cane once you get into a small vehicle, it gets complicated sometimes. And even if you're storing it up under a table, you know, the person next to you, they're feeling something under their feet. Concerned that someone's going to trip on your cane.
You do want to make sure that you don't have your cane out where people can trip on it. But let's talk a little bit about getting into a car. And I've had people with very long canes get into small cars. It's easiest if you get in the car first and sit down before you bring the cane into the car. And then you can have the handle of your cane can go back toward, let's say you're in the front seat, can go back toward the back seat until the tip or the bottom of your cane is able to get into the car. Store it between the seat and the door at the side of the car. But it is much easier to do if you do it after you get in.
And what about if you're in the back seat?
If you're in the back seat, you can put the tip in first and like push that forward. That front, you'll put the handle in first. If you're in the back, you'll put the tip in first. That gives you a little more space.
The one thing I do tell the people when you get in the car first, keep your foot outside the door on the ground, because if you're getting in the car with a Lyft or taxi or someone that's very polite that wants to close the door for you, before you get in and get your cane stored, they may close the door on your cane. If they see your foot out there, they're not going to close the door. So bring the tip in over your left shoulder between you and the driver, okay? Bring the tip in and put it right next to your right foot, or where your right foot's going to be, and then bring the cane handle over your shoulder, over your head to your right shoulder. Now it's kind of resting on your shoulder, but then you can lay it down on the sidewall. And if you're in the back seat, again, get in, keep your foot outside, take the handle of your cane outside of the car behind you, slide the tip in between the seat wall, and put it on your shoulder. If someone's getting in the front seat, wait till they get in and close the door before you slide your cane all the way through.
Thank you. That makes better sense.
Okay, so you're saying when you travel with the straight cane, because when I travel, I use my fold-up cane. And then when you talk about the tip, putting the tip over your left shoulder, are you talking about the end of the cane, not the handle part? Because I'd be afraid I would stick myself in the eye with the tip of the cane.
No, it's the handle first.
The handle over your shoulder. Yeah.
Okay. And you recommend traveling with, I like the fold-up cane, so I ordered a fold-up cane, and that's what I travel with, the fold-up cane. So you're saying travel only with the straight cane that doesn't fold up?
We are recommending the straight cane because we feel that that's the best cane that's out there for people to be successful with.